And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another action-packed episode of The Other Side of Midnight. I shouldn't do that. Hopefully tonight will not be like last night. Tonight our theme is conspiracies. Big ones, small ones, trivial ones, tiny ones, huge ones. And last night we lived through one. I'm still not quite sure what happened, but after we got off the air, I had emails from Will that his phones were still locked up, and other people on our list of guests had their phones ringing. And, you know, it's kind of like, who in their right mind thinks they're doing anything but helping a show devoted to revealing conspiracies than to provide as entertainment an actual live conspiracy on the air? I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive. It almost makes me think that it's a double conspiracy, meaning it could be a conspiracy to make the audience believe in conspiracies by showing a conspiracy. See, that line of reasoning can go like an infinite regression of mirrors. So we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. I do want to pick up on something that was kind of abbreviated and aborted last night, which is a description of what's going on at the other side of midnight. As you know, or as you should know by now, we are in the process of changing from dark matter to another network, a larger network with terrestrial radio and shortwave and even dreaded, I'm sorry, commercials. Not a lot, but just a few of the things that actually you might need. And that's all in the works. We've sent out a letter or two to all our Club 19.5 members, and we're setting up an alternative membership subscription. There will be a button on the website for the new subscription transfer, and you're going to get here like 2 weeks of free archives and all that, courtesy of Keith, as we make this transition and when we get the other stuff set up. And believe me, setting up stuff on the web to actually handle money is not simple. It is not simple at all. So just kind of stay tuned. Watch the site. Watch our homepage, othersideofmidnight.com, and watch our Facebook page and watch my pages, Enterprise Mission, and my personal pages over on Facebook. And you will be kept informed, and you will not lose us, because these days in the digital I can't even talk tonight. That's another conspiracy. In this era of digital tracking and digital social media and digital everything, it's kind of hard to get lost. It's kind of hard to lose people. So everyone out there, you're not going to lose us. We will leave a trail of breadcrumbs, as my grandmother used to say. Actually, she said quite a few things, and some of them actually may come up tonight. So kind of enough of that, because it's kind of boring. You know, housekeeping is always boring, but I don't want people to freak out. You know, when I take a day or two off, as last week I was kind of, you know, really under the weather, I notice people tend to get nervous. Maybe it's the era we're living. Maybe it's the physics. You know, the good are getting better and the bad are getting nervous. No, that doesn't work. Anyway, so things are kind of moving along in the right direction, and we will give updates as they are opportune. And if you will carefully look at your emails, and you will resubscribe if you want to continue following the show, that would be most efficacious, because without you, we guys ain't got a show. And that's basically what it comes down to. I'm trying to create, Em and I are trying to create a kind of community of the air, of the ether surrounding the globe, because for the first time, the technology now makes it possible to bring in all kinds of people that never had voices. And this show is to provide you a platform for proposing things, asking things, presenting things, questioning things. By all means, question things. Item number two on my list tonight, if you go to othersideofmidnight.com and you click on the upper right-hand corner, Radio with Pictures, that will take you to tonight's guest page. And at the top, there's a couple of items. We're going to have some interesting insights into this Panama Papers caper, which, of course, is the 11.5 million documents that were leaked. And I frankly think that's a conspiracy. I don't think just someone decided, because they had nothing better to do, oh, we'll just put out 11 million documents to the world press and see what happens. I think this is part of a behind-the-scenes war between elites, See, I don't think there's one elite group running the world. I think there's a, it's kind of almost like a set of feudal kingdoms, harking back to Robin Hood and Sherwood Forest and, you know, King John versus King Richard and all that. So I think there's a constant competition going on, and every once in a while we see evidence that one side or other sides or whatever momentarily takes the upper hand. And as the physics changes, again, according to our model, and it is accelerating all kinds of interesting synchronicities and revelations and, you know, that stock phrase, good are getting better, bad are getting worse in public. And, oh, are we seeing that? I can't wait to talk about some of the new Trump things, because, frankly, now we are poised on the edge of the razor blade, and decisions to be made over the next several weeks and months, I think, are going to determine the rest of the 21st century. I mean, I don't think that's an overstatement. I think we are at a cusp. We are at a balance point where little forces, small forces, can move immense masses and immense sets of energy, because that's the way the physics works, at least in our model. So if you continue to scroll on down Radio with Pictures, you'll see a note there, Merle Haggard, the country music icon of my childhood and my adulthood, passed away a few days ago on his 79th birthday. Isn't that interesting timing? And quickly, add 7 and 9, what do you get and all that? And then item number 3 is one of his favorites, Okie from Muskogee. And actually, we're going to play a little homage. I got together with Keith earlier this evening, and he set up something. So at the bottom of the hour, in our first break, we're going to give you a little Merle Haggard, vintage Merle Haggard, in honor of someone who basically made a difference. And you know my philosophy, which is, if it weren't for entertainment, if it weren't for the arts, if it weren't for creative people, this planet would not be worth living on. I mean, just look at the awful stuff we see every day on television. Part of it is just because that's what's going on, and part of it, of course, is manipulated and is slanted politically to achieve certain objectives. And creative people, bright people, interesting people, artists, actors, musicians, all those people, when we lose one, we should stop and pause, because without them, I mean, what's kind of really the point? So we'll do our Merle Haggard homage in a little while. Moving on, as I said at the top of the show, tonight we're going to do conspiracies, and I've got one of my most interesting people to do this with tonight. His name is Isaac Weishaupt. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, and if not, I will find out very soon. And there's a whole bunch of stuff from Isaac on Radio with Pictures, so we'll get to that. All kinds of really cool, amazing things. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is symbolism. Deep, deep symbolism in film and movies and in their entertainment, because, again, through entertainment, that's the kind of an open channel where you're in a kind of a semi-hypnotic, self-induced state. So if someone wanted to program you, if they wanted to direct your attention and consciousness in certain directions, that would be the way and the place to do it. And that covers all fields of entertainment and creativity. And so that's another reason why losing someone who was an icon in the field that I don't think had an agenda. I don't think Merle sat up nights thinking, let's see, how can I get them to do so-and-so? Let me kind of start with something that my guest submitted earlier this afternoon, because I think it's kind of important to get a feel for what people think they are doing in and of themselves. According to Isaac, he says, I've been researching my entire life as an ongoing mission to determine if this really is the truth or a cunning holographic deception. I don't fully subscribe to any conspiracy theories, but I do find some intriguing if they resonate with any logic. Also, if they don't, who am I kidding? Some of them are just clever. I live in America and feel that a lot of people are more concerned with being entertained than being informed or educated. Our media certainly reflects that. And I would venture that our politics are now reflecting that, which, of course, brings up the name of that person who shall not be mentioned, at least not right now. Continuing with Isaac. I listen to all kinds of music. See, there's the music. Although I feel as if it is almost manipulative. We're going to ask about that. So I also listen to smooth jazz and classical to balance the more hardcore stuff, and it turns out it's really hardcore. I focus on the Illuminati, transhumanism, religion, aliens, cults, music, various conspiracy theorists, e.g. Freeman Fly, David Icke et al., and the occult. My website, IlluminatiWatcher.com, is just a bite of some of the material I dig through daily. I figured I might as well share some of it in case there are others out there who follow the same breadth of material that I do. For those of you who would like to learn a bit more about what got me interested in all of this, I can give you a brief rundown of the synchronistic events that brought you and I together at this moment. It all started, Isaac continues, back in the 1990s when I was first giving thought to subjects like extraterrestrials and government cover-ups through the incredible classic X-Files. I was interested in other alien-related works of art like The Head, the docudrama film Fire in the Sky, Travis Walton. We're going to be talking about Travis tomorrow morning. And, of course, the alien films. Come on, you just wanted to watch Sigourney Weaver. I know. At this point of my life, it was merely an interest, but it was intense enough that it never really left my mind. Isaac goes on, I recall walking around one night with a friend that held similar interests, and we would shout out to the sky to have aliens abduct us, just so we could know for certain if it was true. Of course, that's a ridiculous thing to do on many levels. Who would really want that to happen to them? Yes, Isaac, I agree. But the point is that I knew that I had a desire to find the truth even in my adolescent years. In recent years, I've learned the demonic deception of seeking aliens and ghost hunting. Oh, are we going to have some sparks over this one? But I'll save that story for later when you're ready to get that far down into the rabbit hole. When I turned 18, I joined the military and met a lot of great people in my journeys, and one friend I met in South Korea turned me on to William Cooper's Behold a Pale Horse. I obtained a copy, and it blew my mind. A lot of the material referenced in X-Files was actually showing up in the former Naval Intelligence Officer's book, e.g. Majestic 12, cover-ups, etc. The book really opened up my mind to a higher-level agenda than merely covering up extraterrestrial existence. It gave me the awareness to realize that perhaps we are being deceived for the gain of some shadowy group right here on Earth. And with that, welcome to the other side of midnight, Isaac Weisskopf.
What a pleasure it is to be on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on our show. So let's see, where should we begin? Are there conspiracies?
Conspiracies are all around. The more I research, the more I find that there is a truth behind all of them, and I feel like the so-called reality of what we're being led to believe in is all just lies set up for various reasons. Some of the most nefarious are ultimately worship of Luciferian doctrine.
That sounds like you're coming from a Christian perspective.
It does, you know, and that's what's odd is when I started this journey, you know, because like you said with the bio thing, for years I've been into this. For over 20 years I've been interested in these kind of fringe topics, so to speak. But it's only been the last 5 or 6 that I really got into it pretty in depth. You know, before I was pretty familiar with all of the kind of common stuff, but in recent years I've really been researching a lot about the dark side to many things, and it's strange how you find all these occult tie-ins with things that shouldn't be. I mean, I'm finding alchemical symbolism in practically every form of entertainment. And like you said earlier with the alien demon agenda, there's an agenda to have us make contact with the spirit world, but I believe it's to our own detriment.
Okay. All right. Let me begin with Bill Cooper. Bill Cooper was shot to death by a bunch of Arizona deputy sheriffs many years ago, which seemed to a lot of people to kind of prove his thesis that he would be a martyr for the cause, for truth, et cetera, et cetera. But when you read Cooper's book, and I have read Pale Horse, it's been a long time, many, many years since I read it, what struck me is that the more complicated a conspiracy theory, the more likely it is that it can't be right, because there are 7 billion people on the planet, and there's an awful lot of power-hungry people. I mean, just look at Donald Trump. Ah, I mentioned the word. if you can just take Donald as an archetype, and for every Donald that we see, there's a whole bunch of them that we're not seeing, how would people of such incredible ego manage to all work together to enslave all the rest of us without it breaking down into one set of mob hits after another?
I firmly believe that there is a coordinated agenda.
But why? How do you get ego-bound maniacs, people who are actually, you know, clinically, psychologically nuts, how do you get them to work together?
Well, there's this thing they have with the evolution of consciousness, they call it, where for thousands of years they believe they're in charge of directing humanity towards the ultimate future of this Luciferian doctrine that I talk about a lot in a lot of my articles and whatnot. So to me, it seems like once you have so much wealth, the only thing you can really keep accumulating would be power. But the power, they have to use that for something. And to me, it sounds like a lot of this occult stuff that they get into, it all supports the evolution of consciousness where they want to usher in the new age of mankind and push us into this new world where we destroy the things that we know of in this kind of like – it's kind of like this dark nihilistic future is what they want. And to me, ultimately, it's strictly because of the threat Christianity has.
Yeah, but Isaac, you still haven't answered my question. How do you get a bunch of ego-bound maniacs to work together? I mean, if there is a coordinated conspiracy, if the world is really run by shadowy people that we never see, because all the folks that we see, you know, in public office and in entertainment and film and all that, they're just puppets as part of this background plot, right?
Sure.
If these people actually are so determined to have power, it just seems to me that if you see in these superhero films, which we're going to get into, mm-hmm. what inevitably happens in these films? I mean, now they're pitting Superman against Batman. It's like it's kind of like, you know, art follows life, in the sense that ego will strive to suppress other ego. So how do you get a coordinated conspiracy where they all work together? What's the payoff for working together that is bigger than their individual egos?
I think that the core of their occult belief system is strong enough that, you know, they go through all these rituals and these like the vow of silence stuff with the Harpocrates stuff. You know, I don't really know how.
The vow of silence for the what stuff?
Sorry. Yeah. So there's this idea that, you know, in Freemasonry and other secret societies, they have what they call the vow of silence.
Right. Meaning the stuff you learn inside you're not supposed to talk about outside, right?
Right, right.
Well, so, there's also non-disclosure agreements. There's contracts where, you know, proprietary technology and all that. So, I mean, I haven't really noticed that the Masons are very much secret. All the stuff the Masons kind of believe is out there. The only secrecy is the ritual part, which we have been tracking for several decades now, and that most people don't want to believe because they don't believe that, for instance, NASA conducts launches and landings and flybys on ritual dates with ritual star alignments and all that. But it's like, you know, the big question there is why? What's the point? And the point seems to be a ritual magic that is somehow entraining a physics to accomplish something that without the ritual would not be accomplished, which gets us back to your term, consciousness, manipulated consciousness. I guess what I'm asking is how far back, if you actually believe, and I guess I should ask you this first, you believe the world is run by this coordinated group behind the scenes. If that's true, how far back have you been able to trace it, and what, we're going to get to the important part now, what is your earliest evidence for a global united conspiracy to run all the rest of us by a few people?
I suppose it depends on if you believe in the ancient astronaut theory stuff, because that would be the Anunnaki, like the stuff we hear about on Ancient Aliens, and that's roughly 400,000 years ago, I believe, is what they claim on that. And then the Bible, they talk about the Nephilim. So, I mean, it could go back as far as that. But you can follow kind of a line of initiates through these mystery schools and secret societies. Obviously, you've got the ancient Egyptians and the whole Mesopotamian stuff, which kind of went underground. And, you know, the Romans were into this pagan stuff, as were the Greeks. But then when Christianity came about, it seemed like they had to go underground. And that's when you had these Freemason groups and this Age of Enlightenment time period. And a lot of this stuff kind of plays on each other. And when you look at the techniques they use in these different belief systems, like we're talking about the Kabbalah or some of these Eastern practices of meditation and yoga, a lot of this stuff is all about making contact with these kind of extraterrestrial entities. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the film Prometheus.
Oh, wait. In Christianity, I used to be a very good Roman Catholic, and I'm now kind of a recovering Catholic. When I heard about angels, I mean, angels are extraterrestrial entities, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay, so extraterrestrial entities are real.
Yes.
Okay.
And I do believe that. I do believe in extraterrestrial entities. I just feel like
Do you believe in extraterrestrial entities that are related to us genetically, DNA, etc.? In other words, our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers?
Like we were seeded from another planet?
No. That we are part of a much larger family, and what's going on here is kind of part of the human... In other words, when Neil Armstrong stepped on the surface of the moon, remember the big controversy about his first words? That's one small step for quote, a man, one giant leap for mankind.
Like we're part of something bigger than just what's on
Earth. Well, because if you actually go back to the tape, I've had digital experts I've talked to over the years. There is no A in that. There's no noise. There's no... I mean, I was there at Cronkite's side the night that he stepped on the moon. Actually, I was 3,000 miles away. I was electronically at his side from the studio in California. And there is no missing A. It was... That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And as I say in Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, I believe that was an utterance that was planned, that was planned to reveal the real relationship of humanity on Earth right now, human beings, you and me included, to a bigger humanity to which we are intimately related but not allowed to know exist out there because we're the poor, 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 poor cousins who've gone through hell and we're not kind of worthy of being invited to Thanksgiving dinner anymore for a while.
Yeah, I don't know that I can prove or disprove any of that. I just, from what I can tell, they certainly believe it. When I say they, I mean this, you know, secretive Illuminati group or whatever people want to call them.
By the way, speaking of the Illuminati, your last name is Weishaupt, right?
No, that's actually a pseudonym. I should have clarified that right off the bat.
Because Robin said to me, you know, about an hour ago, she said, is he related to Adam Weishaupt? And for everybody who has no idea what we're talking about, Adam Weishaupt was the guy who founded the Illuminati in Bavaria in 1776. And she remembered that year, and she said, isn't that an interesting coincidence? Intimating, of course, there's some connection between the Bavarian Illuminati and the creation of the United States of America in 1776. So you took that name to what? Make a point.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a clever play on the website is Illuminati Watcher. So I was trying to find a pseudonym that had the I and the W. Uh-huh. It was actually, you know, when I started this whole thing, I had zero intentions of someday talking to you on your wonderful radio show, but I had no intentions of taking it anywhere. It was just like a hobby of a blog sort of thing. And as interest grew, my first radio show, they called and they said, what's your name? And I was like, geez, I don't even have a name on here and I don't want to use my real name.
So wait a minute. You've done all this research and when it finally gets a chance to publish and go out there, you didn't want to do it under your own name. Why not?
You know, I still work a 9-to-5 job and it's a professional job. And it's just something that, like, you know, I don't know that people, like, I talk to people at my work, and I'm the crazy guy at the office, but I tone it down really far for them. And even that, most people can't handle. So, you know, it's kind of I can't be the conspiracy theorist guy at work. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I got to keep my 9-to-5 job so I can pay the bills, keep the lights on at my house.
Okay. All right, Isaac. We will call you then Isaac for the rest of the evening. So you believe that the story of the Nephilim in Genesis is actually part of the conspiracy itself? Were the Nephilim the original controllers of Earth, of humankind then?
Yeah, they were. I mean, they started this bloodline. I mean, it kind of depends on what you want to believe, but the bloodlines, it seems like there's...
Well, no, it's not what I want to believe. It's what your evidence is showing us, because remember, I'm an evidence kind of guy. I want to see data tonight. I want to talk about data. I want to see a paper trail. I want to see a trail of breadcrumbs going back to my grandmother. So let's start with the Nephilim.
Okay. So these sons of gods or fallen angels, they started the bloodlines that... kind of segue through to, you know, possibly the Titans.
Okay, and this is in classical Greek mythology.
Kind of like demigods, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, demigods are a mixture of human and god, right?
Genetic. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, first big question. How can you mix DNA of human beings with gods, who obviously would have a different DNA, unless the gods are really not gods, but they're just human beings who have more technology, more toys, more whiz-bang things like, you know, Arthur Clarke, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So were the gods of the Nephilim era, were the Nephilim, in fact, just advanced humans who happened to have more toys than the humans that they interacted with way back when here on the planet?
Yeah, they could have just been further evolved if that was the case.
No, I don't say further evolved. I'm saying family, cousins, relations. You know, you look at the United States. We have urban areas. We have incredibly sophisticated urban areas. We have rural areas. We have people in the Ozarks still making moonshine. We have a huge spread, a cultural disparity in human beings just on Earth. I'm just talking about the continental United States. Suppose the human family was much more interesting and diverse than we've been allowed for the last several thousand years to know about, and in fact the so-called interaction between us and gods is really interaction between us and members of the family who just kept their toys and kept their knowledge and kept their history, and we're the poor cousins who've been basically depressed down on the farm for some reason for far too long.
Yes, that's quite possible. The 'cause if you look at the history of the occult belief system, they think that long ago matter and spirit were connected as one, and that God created the matter from his thoughts, right?
Right.
So these ancient civilizations, we're talking about like the Mesopotamians and the Romans, like they were able to see these kind of, they were able to be better connected to the spirit world, because there is a connection there between the material world and the spiritual world. And that's why a lot of these kind of older religions, they do this kind of meditation stuff to try to make contact. But as time went by, they believe that the pineal gland started to kind of recede into the mind, and we were able to be less in communion with these gods.
Okay, so we're at the bottom of the hour. We have a break coming up, and I do want to do this little thing to Merle Haggard. So, Keith, take it away. And we are back with my guest of the morning, Illuminati Watcher Isaac Weishaupt, a pseudonym, a pen name. But Isaac, let me ask you this question that came in from Georgia Lambert, who is someone who's been on the show several times and who is an expert in metaphysics and has actually discussed secret societies quite extensively on the show. She says, listening to the broadcast, it seems that Isaac considers all secret societies are negative. He apparently makes no room for the idea there is always a balance in the world, and there may be those groups that stand for light and work from behind the scenes for humanity's benefit. Isaac, what do you think?
I think that's a valid point. I don't necessarily think anyone is particularly, I don't subscribe to my own beliefs that other people can't be positive as well. I'm friends with people that are, you know, atheists, people that are even into New Age stuff, and I actually
even into New Age stuff,
even the New Age, and I've used some of those New Age concepts, and I believe that, you know, that kind of stuff's good for the terrestrial world and working on ourselves here, but as far as secret societies working for the good, I'm not saying that's impossible. That's quite possible. I just know what I'm reading connecting through to entertainment.
Given that humanity has some really bad apples,
sure.
We have, you know, law enforcement agencies, and obviously all law enforcement agencies have a group of folks working, you know, through the department, et cetera, bureau, whatever you want to call it, that are undercover. And they match themselves in the underworld, in the criminal communities and in the terrorist groups and all that, as being baddest of the bad, but they're actually good. How do you differentiate between the need to work, as George just said very elegantly, behind the scenes to try to get good stuff forward without revealing what your real agenda is? Because if you did, your head would be cut off, in some cases now, literally.
So are we talking about this, you know, I've been talking about this evolution of consciousness.
No, we're basically talking about groups, human groups that are dedicated to bad stuff and good stuff. And the fact that, I used to be like you, that I kind of asked myself, why the heck, if they're doing good, are they secret? But if you look at history, if you look at human history over just the last few thousand years, a lot of time, as McCoy says in Star Trek, good never wins unless it's very, very careful. And being careful sometimes implies you can't be right out there with your agenda, because if you have fewer good guys than bad guys, the good guys are not going to win, and you have to actually be a little more clever and a little more sophisticated to achieve the ultimate bending of the curve, bending of the river, to get humanity to move in positive directions. But do you think that's all kind of negative?
Well, that's an interesting idea. I've never really thought of it that way. I've just been more into trying to find these common threads that I'm seeing in entertainment, how they all tie into occult beliefs that range from Satanism to New Age stuff.
Okay, so let's go to the movies. I love movies, particularly movies these days, because the superhero film has taken over Hollywood, as the phrase goes, the tentpoles, the $250 million film here and the almost $500 million film there and whatever. They're huge on special effects. They're huge on superstars. They're huge on mega stories. They come out of, most of them now come out of the comic world, people like Jack Kirby and other incredibly creative people. And you feel that's an Illuminati agenda to do what?
It's meant to usher in this idea that we can create a new form of man, and the Superman. And if you look at
wait, doesn't that go back to Nietzsche and even before?
That's right. Yes, and we're talking a lot of these different agendas we're seeing play out right now. They all go down ultimately to the same path, and it's all about destroying the current version of mankind and replacing it with this new, quote unquote, improved version of the Superman.
And another name for that is what?
Like the mutants, I suppose.
No.
Like,
the name for that process. What would that be called?
Oh, like the alchemical transformation.
I was thinking we're going to go for transhumanism.
Oh, okay, yeah, exactly. That's one of the paths we've got. You know, like the Nazis talked about the superhumans. You've got the transhuman agenda.
Well, the Nazis took their prototype from, again, Nietzsche. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But who made Nietzsche God? I mean, you have a guy, you have followers, you have human beings. Why does it have to be a conspiracy? Because, again, I don't see how a conspiracy with a capital C could not break down, fractally fragment into different competing groups that basically would be at war with each. Oh, my God. Look at this planet. Look at the history of the planet. We've been at war with each other. Is that not evidence of competing groups as opposed to one supergroup?
Yes, I agree with that. I think that, you know, Moses ushered in a new age, as did Aleister Crowley. You know, if people are familiar with the occultist Aleister Crowley, and he's been revered ever since. And I think there's a somewhat covert battle to see who can usher in this final age of mankind, where they supplant the current form and make it a superhuman. Maybe even immortal.
Okay. Do you believe in evolution?
Do I believe in evolution? So I think there's, there's aspects of it, I believe.
No. It's a kind of a binary. Does life on Earth evolve through an evolutionary process, trial and error? You know, the bad things die, the good things live to procreate, and so the children carry the genetic codes, et cetera, and ultimately, over a long enough period of time, you get better and better adapted to the environment, and the ultimate adaptation is if the environment changes and you can change faster than it changes, then you make it. If you don't, you lose. In other words, do you believe in the classic Darwinian model of evolution?
No. I think the adaptation is possible as far as the full-on evolution.
But that is evolution.
There's holes in it.
Adaptation is evolution.
I think that we can't – so, like, why are there still apes if we evolved from apes? Like, why didn't they all evolve eventually? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, from what I understand – and I'm not an evolutionary biologist type, but from what I understand, there's still missing links. But I've also read it's never been disproven exactly, but from what I understand, there's still holes in the theory. And not to mention Darwin was somewhat of an occultist himself from what I've read. So I think part of this idea, if they can push this idea of evolution and make us believe it, then if we ever were to make contact with these aliens, who I am suggesting are simply demons, if we did make contact, we would believe they are evolutionarily superior to us and we should listen to them. But my warning is I don't believe that. I think these aliens are a demonic trick and we're being led down a path in order to make contact with them. In order to pursue this idea that we can become this superhuman.
So you really, your Christianity really has guided your research, and your model is based fundamentally from a Christian's perspective of God, Satan, good, bad, and we're kind of in the middle.
Unfortunately, I didn't want it to go there, because when I started the whole thing, I was always really turned off by conspiracy theorists that started the Bible thumping stuff. And I was always approached it kind of like in a secular manner where I was like, you know, I'll research my conspiracies on this and I'll study my religion over here. I don't need the two together. Mm-hmm. But ironically, after studying it for so long, it seems obvious that is the agenda, is to destroy Christianity. And, you know, it all signs point to it.
But wait a minute. Christians on Earth are a minority. In fact, a relatively small minority of self-professed, you know, God-fearing Christians. They're outdistanced by Hindus, by all kinds of, you know, Muslims. There's 1.5 billion Muslims.
Yes.
So how can a global conspiracy be focused on a religion which is kind of the minority religion of the planet?
Well, I think the other ones are trying to take energy and harness it in one direction.
But when you say energy, what kind of energy?
Like when I was talking about like the yoga, sex magic, all that kind of stuff. It's all about trying to make contact with these kind of spiritual entities.
And so wait. You're saying that yoga is somehow connected with sex magic? Crowley is somehow connected with the Buddha?
That's right, yes.
Really?
Yeah, and you know,
well, wait, Buddhism kind of predated Christianity by, you know, a few thousand years.
Yeah, and Crowley, he's got a book about the yoga stuff, and the whole idea, if you look at the I read a book called Lords of the Left-Hand Path, which guided a lot of my research, because they talk a lot about the different you know, I don't want to call it, they're all kind of like different satanic worship belief systems. And in them, they do anything to reach these altered states of mind. And when you reach these altered states, you can do it through drugs, music, sex magic, that kind of stuff, in order to make contact with these extraterrestrial entities.
Okay. But a lot of consciousness raising is not about making contact with anybody but yourself, trying to figure out yourself. You know, they talk typically about your higher self, meaning that we're fragmented in this reality, and, you know, we all have positive inclinations and negative inclinations, and the idea is to kind of get control of the negative and kind of try to expand the positive and figure out who the heck we are. And that's part of these traditions, as I understand it, to basically put us in touch with us, not anybody out there or beyond.
Well, some of it is, but a lot of them are trying to contact these spirits, and that's where, like...
Well, that's more like a seance. You know, that's back to the 1920s.
Yeah, and they still do that stuff. That's what the entertainment industry is doing. That's why, my hip-hop conspiracy book, I go through all the different artists and how they all have alter egos, and they flat-out tell us that they're making contact and they feel these spirits coming through them, and that's magic ritual. They're evoking these spirits, and that's why people like Beyonce are called divas, because diva is a Hindu term for goddess. They're channeling goddesses through their body, and that's how they end up being at the top of the charts and how they get all the fame.
I think the term diva actually originated in the operatic community, but I may not be, the last word in that. Yes?
I've seen Diva Yana, I think, is the full term that they call the goddess.
Yes. Well, since a lot of women in opera really do think they're descendants of the gods, having known a couple of opera stars, I don't think that's a kind of a misplaced term, because it's kind of a self... Anyway, we're kind of wandering off track. I want to go to the movies. Let's talk about big films and agendas in big films, because we're now surrounded by these huge, super expensive, superhuman, superhero films. And you think that's part of the conspiracy to do what?
I think it's a subtle form of mind control. I think films like the Star Wars series, they play on archetypes. And, I'm sure you and your audience are familiar with Carl Jung and his work on the different kind of archetypes that are supposedly part of like this instinctual part of our brain that we can tap into, which is why the Star Wars films resonate so much. Mm. So when you look at the duality concept in Star Wars and this cosmic force, it's all part of this old pagan system that they want to make this new religion. So like the new age and the new religion is really just an old religion. And that's why at the beginning of Star Wars, they say a long time ago, far, far away, they're just saying that there's this old religion and they're trying to make it resurface and repackage it as a new religion.
You have a quote in your first book. I think this is the first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory.
Yes.
Okay. You have a quote from an old friend of ours, Jay Widener. In fact, Jay Widener and a whole bunch of my friends are in your book, and I'm not in your book. I'm kind of intrigued why. Anyway, Jay says, quote, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then a symbol is worth 1,000 pictures. That's a heck of a good quote from Jay. So if you're trying to communicate something that's very complicated, but is in essence resonates with consciousness, with the human attention, isn't the right symbol really connecting to something at much deeper levels, which is why it works? In other words, it's almost like an unspoken language. It's part of the furniture. It's part of the universe. It's part of what we're made of, which is why we resonate to it in the first place. But why does it have to have a negative connotation? Why can't it be a positive connotation?
Well, I suppose it depends on who you want to listen to. And I don't particularly trust entertainment industry. And it brings up questions of why they would need to do this so covertly. They wield great, but the truth is Beyonce and Jay-Z have more power and control over kids than their own parents do. And why is that?
But I remember, you remember Elvis Presley?
Yes.
Elvis Presley was a shattering experience in the 1950s. How many parents were freaking out that their kids, their Bobby Soxers, were turning to swinging hips and all jailhouse rock? And I mean, it was a catastrophe from a parental point of view. It actually produced a kind of a better, more open breed of human being, I believe, in this culture, because it opened up to more possibilities. We were less judgmental in certain areas. We were less negative. But when he hit culturally, it was viewed by an awful lot of people as the worst nightmare possible.
Yeah, you make a good point there. There's good and bad with some of these kind of progressive ideas. Like, for instance, the pansdrogynous movement. It's this idea of kind of blurring the lines between the male-female dichotomy. You know, there's good and bad in that. It's good that people are tolerant and being more accepting of people of the LGBT community. However, if you look at the paths that they're setting up, they're trying to push us into the digital matrix eventually by making everything bland and the same.
Well, wait a minute. I've not seen a bland and the same, you know, mega movie in the last 20 years. Each one is bigger and better. The one super movie that I really didn't like, Robin and I really hated it, was the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where Sean Connery was so outdistanced by the stupid CGI that you basically wished that they'd just gotten rid of it and just stuck with the story. So, you know, not all these things work and not all the images and archetypes resonate because you're basically at the hands of commercial people who are trying to sensationalize a culture which is increasingly resistant to stimuli. I mean, the average person now is surrounded by so much input that if you brought someone from the 18th or 19th centuries and plunked them down here in the 21st, they'd probably freak out. They'd probably go into a quiet room, close all the blinds, and just lie in a fetal position because there's too much input. There's too much sensory overload of all of us.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think they want to automate things, and we can go into the transhumanism stuff later. But
well, you keep saying you think. I'd like to hear some evidence. Give me some evidence. Give me really good evidence.
Of transhumanism?
Of any of this, you know. Starting with the word diva, according to my sources who've been sending me some emails on this from Oxford, I guess, the word entered the English language in the late 19th century. It is derived from the Italian noun diva, a female deity, female god. The plural of the word in English is divas, in Italian dive, DV. The basic sense of the term is goddess, the feminine of the Latin word divus, Italian divo, someone deified after death, or the Latin deus, i.e. God.
Yes, that's exactly it. And that's why...
Have you ever met a woman who doesn't think she's a goddess? Come on.
I'm not going there. No, but...
Is like your girlfriend listening then?
No. It's too late over here. I'm supposed to get up for work in like 2 hours. No, but seriously, Whitney Houston, she was always referenced as a diva, and she, you know, she died in the bathtub. But what people don't know is that the night prior, her daughter was unconscious in a bathtub in the same hotel. So they took Whitney out, the diva, and threw the bathtub, which is ritual occult stuff because the bathtub is a cleansing ritual in witchcraft. And then several years later, they take her daughter out in the same exact fashion in the bathtub.
Hmm.
So we're seeing this weird kind of, and again, it's.
But you're taking this story and you're imprinting, you're projecting these archetypes on the events, but you have no data that the events actually transpired the way you're projecting, unless you do, and I'd like to hear it.
Right, and. You know, I think there's a little bit of assumptions being made there. I'll grant that. But I think the coincidences are far too odd. If you look at a lot of the stuff involving that, the Whitney Houston and the Bobby Christina deaths, like Bobby Christina, her
yeah, view, and it all could be just straight psychology where her daughter just couldn't, you know.
Could be. Could, absolutely.
Could resist, you know. Okay, let's get back to the movies. What's the first film that you kind of took apart, that you analyzed, where you saw important markers for this kind of conspiracy?
The first film?
Mm-hmm.
I would say The Matrix, because that was a film that was steeped in heavy-duty philosophy. I read a book with the various philosophies identified in it. But what that ultimately is the reality of where they want to push us. So,
wait. The Matrix basically said, question reality. You may be living in an artificial, constructed... In other words, it sounds to me, when I saw The Matrix the first time, which I saw with Robin when we first met decades ago, almost 2 decades ago, in a little theater in I think it was Coral Gables, Florida, the thing that struck me was, here's the first film that basically says, question the reality around you, because in fact it may be constructed as a metaphor. In other words, it was a film that was illuminating people to question the possibility of programming, of unconscious agendas, of hidden variables, people trying to make you think things that are not real. It didn't gloss it over. It basically said, look, you know, for God's sake, don't take the wrong color pill.
Yeah, and it's kind of a warning, and that's why I say the predictive programming comes into play with Hollywood, because they show us these things in order to warn us. It's kind of like we're a willing part of their audience.
But wait a minute, how can someone who's trying to warn you be a bad guy?
Well, I think they want to take us there, but I think contractually they need to show us, they need to warn us
contractually
in order to clear their conscience of it.
I think you lost me.
I think on their end, for them to, you know, alleviate themselves from any responsibility of you know, being evil or whatever you want to call it, I think they show it to us and then let us make the choice.
Well, wait a minute. That's what God does. He gives us choice.
Right.
Either be sinful or be upright, righteous, but we have the choice. It's called free will. The Matrix movie was the ultimate in the exemplification of free will. You have a choice, represented by the pills. Either continue to believe the fantasy or take the pill, decide to see the truth, and be, I'm going to mix metaphors here, born again.
That's right. Yes. And I think that it's a fair warning, because
But then the guys that made the Matrix are good guys. If they're trying to warn you about reality is not what you think it is, isn't that a positive thing?
It could be. I mean, it depends on how you, the message.
It could be.
It could.
How could it not be good? If someone's trying to tell you, hey, there's a train coming, get off the damn tracks, is that good or bad?
Well, I suppose it's good.
Okay, you suppose.
Well, the guys who made that film, the Wachowski brothers,
right?
They both came out as, I don't know the correct term, transgender, pandrogynous. And to me, it seems like all
Wait,
of these...
Are we now talking about the producers' personal lives, who they are as people?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Why is that any of our business? Why should we care?
Well, I think it's all part of... Because there's a lot of stuff that lines up, like the Baphomet. You've probably seen the Baphomet image, I'm sure, right? It's the devil with the breasts. Anyways,
I've actually heard the term Baphomet, and it's a head. It was supposed to be the head secretly worshipped by the
Templars,
Knights Templar.
Yeah, but there's the actual one that's like, it's a male with breast, and what it is the reconciling of opposites. So what they want to do is, like I said before, they want to get rid of the male female dichotomy.
The problem, Isaac, is you're giving me an awful lot of conclusions based on your Christian beliefs, which is fine, and you're very honest. You label these as beliefs, but I keep asking for specific evidence, and you saw The Matrix, and you basically concluded that, you know, this movie is telling us about a secret reality where we're all manipulated, but the very people who brought us this potential truth are bad because they, in their personal lives, they're not what you or I might choose to do.
Oh, I don't think they're bad because of that. I'm just saying there's somewhat of an agenda to push us down that path. So if you look at, let me give you an example to maybe explain this better. Martine Rothblatt, she's the person who started Sirius XM satellite.
Mm-hmm.
She also started a transhumanism religion. And she is part of the transhuman movement, and she also came out as I don't know if it's transgender or pangender. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with these people, they're evil or anything like that. But if you look at how some of the belief systems cross over, why do we need the transhumanism movement tied in with that? Like, what's the spirit behind that? You know what
okay.
I'm saying?
We're at the top of the hour. We have to take another break. My guest this morning is Isaac Weishaupt, and we were discussing conspiracies, and unfortunately, Isaac, I'm missing the data part. So I think I'm going to conclude this conversation because I've asked for an hour now for data, actual evidence, you know, text, references, documents, and you have very interesting opinions, but it's basically scenarios as opposed to evidence. So I believe we're going to take our break, and when we come back, we're going to open the lines, and I'm going to talk to folks in our audience who I haven't been able to talk to for several days. Isaac, thank you for being our guest, and you're on the other side of midnight, everyone. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
Across the ocean, the land of seas against the sand, lies a beach of mixed emotion. You made me king of this land. This heart has come from beyond the grave.
I'm sorry, folks. We had a little bit of a look. The honest thing is that I invite almost everybody on this show to provide evidence. And when I talk for an hour and I don't get one single specific piece of evidence, I get a lot of opinion refracted through a personal, you know, set of beliefs. And I believe everyone has the right to believe anything they want. That's what the Constitution obviously underscores. That's fine, but when you're trying to separate fact from fiction, when you're trying to thread your way through a very important path to figure out what you're going to believe yourself, at some point you got to have evidence. Anyway, good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm calling from Alaska, and I just like to. I'm really sorry that you cut off Isaac. I was really looking forward to asking him if he had researched David Flynn's material. If you're looking for evidence, you don't have to look any further than that.
Well, David was a very good friend of mine before he tragically died far, far too early. And,
well, I agree.
And I agree. It would have been an interesting conversation. But I frankly, unfortunately, don't think that Isaac was up to it. I asked him over the first full hour for evidence, for data, for something we could hang on to, and all he would give us is opinions. Now, opinions are fine if you label them, which he did very, very, you know, honestly, he labeled them as opinions, but I want evidence. I want data. We are surrounded by conspiracies. The problem is you got to have the evidence to document it when you make the claim.
Well, I don't think there's any point in belaboring that there are conspiracies, and I personally don't think that your suggestion that you have competing conspiracies really holds much water.
Why?
Because
why?
Is
there any other activity in human beings that you know of that isn't competition?
Look.
Just to answer the question, yes or no?
Well, of course there are.
Okay.
There would not be any kind of cooperation in this world if it was all up to competition.
Well, there is limited cooperation for a time. I mean, why do you think we write contracts? Ultimately, contracts have to be adjudicated by some power that's bigger than you are. Otherwise, you're just, you know, a god unto yourself. So if you have a whole bunch of supermen hiding in the background, guiding the rest of humanity, what's to keep them from trying to one-up each other and ultimately become the one guy who will then get knocked off by the next one guy who will get knocked off by the next? In other words, I don't see how a global conspiracy, given what we know of human nature, can possibly hang together.
Well, it's not done by humans.
Oh, well, that's an important point. But see, he never said that. He talked about, you know, aliens. The idea of aliens is satanically inspired, but he never said.
Forget about the inspiration. It's the actual entity.
The actual entity is what?
Satan.
Okay.
And he has his finger in every pie out there. And he can manipulate them, and there's constant warfare because that's what he is able to foment by having these disparate elements. Conspiracy here, conspiracy there, conspiracy there. Look, you don't have to even pretend that there aren't conspiracies. Look at all the disparate elements that make up 9/11.
No, I'm not saying there are conspiracies. I'm just saying that if you have a world full of conspiracists, it's going to fractalize, meaning they're going to compete, unless they're all being organized from some super entity, and you claim that that's what's going on, and that entity is what we call Satan, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
my father had feet on the ground at Roswell, and I have seen the fallout from that in my life. Ever since I got thrown out of second grade for trading Mars Attacks bubblegum cards at St. Mary's in Baltimore.
Wait, you kind of missed me on that one.
But I have seen the fallout from my father's presence at Roswell in 1947. He said, when I heard about the crash at Roswell, I borrowed a plane from Edwards, and I flew myself there.
Wait a minute, this is your father?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I said, well, what did you do then, Dad?
This is back in 1947.
Yeah, that's what he was talking about. Yeah, I wasn't born in 47. I was born in 54.
Understand.
At Maxwell Air Force Base, by the way. Anyway, to go on. I said, what did you do then, Dad? He said, I refueled my plane. And I said, well, where did you go? He said, Wright Patterson. He said, Wright Field.
So wait a minute.
Hang on.
I want to get this straight because we leap back in time now to 1947. Your dad was based at Edwards, right?
Yeah.
He took an aircraft.
No, he wasn't based at Edwards. He was head of a long-range reconnaissance squadron called the Ptarmigan squadron out of Eielson Air Force Base in Alaska.
Okay. So how do we get to Edwards?
Furthermore, go ahead, ask a question.
No, I said, how did we get from Alaska to Edwards to Roswell? You said that when Roswell occurred, your dad took a plane from Edwards.
Yes.
Well, how did he get to Edwards, and why was he at Edwards?
He was a pilot. He's an Air Force pilot.
Okay. So was he directed?
Army Air Corps at that
right,
time.
Right, Army Air Corps at that time. So was he directed as part of a mission to go from Edwards to Roswell Air Force Base, or Army Air Corps Base?
The way he made it sound was he took it upon himself.
How could he if he's...
borrowed a plane.
If he's a member...
of Duffy, okay?
I tell you what, sir, I don't think this is leading us in any direction, so I'm going to move on to the next call. Thank you for your opinion.
Okay.
You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm on the air.
You're on the air.
Oh, good to meet you, Richard.
Tell me and the rest of us who you are.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Edwin. I'm calling from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Edwin?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we've got a kind of a bad connection, so you might have to speak up a little.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's better. Go ahead.
I'm Edwin from Salt Lake City, Utah. Anyways, I wanted to ask your guest.
But he's not here anymore, so it's hard to ask him.
Oh, well, I wanted to ask what he thought about Mormons because, you know, his type of research kind of goes into the line of, you know, the Mormon Church was created by Joseph Smith, who was given, you know, the stuff by the supposed Illuminati.
No. An angel named Moroni appeared to Joseph Smith and gave him tablets and documentation and a thesis and a conceptual idea for creating a new religion.
Correct. And it's interesting to look at. I wanted to know his view because I can kind of imagine what your view, Dr. Hoagland, would be.
It's not
that.
Doctor, but thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't be. I'm not. Go ahead.
So, you know, I just wanted to, I guess, compare and
well,
contrast.
Look, these are all the kind of questions I would have loved to have asked if Isaac had given me anything specific. But, you know, my grandmother used to say opinions are basically, you know, worth what you pay for them. And he had lots of opinions, but no facts, no evidence, no data. I wanted to get to the movies three or four times with a specific, like I said, the earliest movie, and he picked Matrix. And then he said Matrix was a suppressive film designed to lull us into this false sense of something. When I looked at it and I saw Matrix as an incredibly revelatory film that basically was saying to a whole generation of kids, pay attention to the world because it's not what you think it is.
Right. And I also...
In metaphor.
I'm sorry. Right. And I also believe what you said earlier, Richard, about how even if the whole world is controlled by one individual, entity or otherwise, you still get number two and number three who want that number one spot.
And didn't we hear that in Genesis? Isn't that the story of God and his right-hand lieutenant, who basically had a falling out, and that's how we get, you know, God the Father, and then the you know, the arch nemesis, Satan.
Right.
In other words, did that only happen once? Or to me, since fractal physics is real, you would have inevitable fractal conspiracies within conspiracies. In other words, I don't see how one conspiracy can run anything because people don't want to be run. If they're of that level of ego, they want to run.
Right. Well, one point that I wanted to make, you know, if you go to the Mormon Church, the description of what happened before humanity is actually a little bit different in that Satan and Jesus were brothers, and Heavenly Father, God, you know, is their father of both these two entities. And
yeah, but doesn't that sound a little bit like Enki and Enlil?
Yeah. Oh,
just a tad?
Right. And well, the plan that Lucifer, Satan wanted was to control man and force man to do the right thing, whereas Jesus took Heavenly Father's plan, which was to allow us choice and give us the choice. And so... if you look, you're talking politics, and you talk about, you know, how the government has become kind of a nanny state where they want to be our parents and they want to make us choose what their version of correct is instead of allowing us to make the choice ourselves.
Well, that's taken to the extreme. I see an awful lot of non-nanny statism in government. In other words, nannies are supposed to take good care of you. And a lot of government programs don't take care of anybody but government. So, anyway, right. I've got tons of other folks. Boy, tight.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Richard. And you really do have a great program here. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and keep listening. Darren, you're on the air.
Hey, Richard. How you doing?
Well, I was doing kind of, you know, I thought this was going to be a really interesting and exciting evening, and I'm kind of depressed. I'm kind of disappointed because... Isaac is not ready for prime time. I'm probably cruel to say that, but he
you
has.
Were nice.
But
you were nice to him.
But he has potential. You know, I've got his books here. You know, he knows how to research. He just needs to, you know, bring out more evidence as opposed to opinion filtered through his particular personal religious persuasion.
Well, we still have 45 more minutes. So,
well, we've got tons of other people. So,
I guess. I'm just going to say something from left field here.
Okay.
I saw something interesting yesterday. Have you ever seen the haka dance?
Ever seen a what? Ever seen a what?
The haka dance from, like, Maori haka dance.
Maori, like, from New Zealand?
Yeah.
No, no.
Oh, my goodness. I saw a haka dance last night. Just one gentleman. It's a good friend of mine at work. And he used to do it before every rugby game. And I just was struck that it seems so much like a type of meditation, but on the other spectrum. It's so bizarre. I mean, he was like a different person for like 5 minutes. And it was, and when he came out of it, he was just rejuvenated, but yet it was a totally different, and it's so different than like yoga or anything else.
Is there a lot of whirling and spinning in this dance?
No, it's like, you ever see Whale Rider, the movie?
Actually, no.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of big guys, and they're have all these, you know, it's a different language, and they're shouting all these things, and they're just dancing, and it's kind of a violent looking dance, and I thought for sure you had seen it, but you got to look it up. Anyways, I just thought I'd call and talk about that and tell you that it was interesting.
Hmm. I thought you were going to tell me that at some point they all stand in, you know, outline 19.5 on the dance floor or something.
No, I was just calling because I wanted to change it up tonight and call in. And,
all right.
And hopefully Michelle will call in. That's what I'm hoping.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Okay, you're on the air. Good morning. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hi, are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Richard, nice to talk to you. It's been a long time that I've been listening to you, sir.
Well, thank you. I mean, the show's only been on for, like, what, 9 months? But I guess now that's a long time.
Oh, I'm going back about 20 years.
Oh, well, when I did other stuff. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, I appreciated the way that you had treated the first guest. I do agree with the dismissal, but we won't go into that.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. We're going to open lines tonight because my guests didn't turn out to be exactly what I had expected or the audience deserved. And so we basically move on. The number, let me find my number here. I should know this by heart by now, but there's too many other things to remember, and I'm at the time when if you remember one more thing, you have to forget one more thing. See, 505-796-8802. 505-796-8802 is our open lines tonight. All you can call Other Side of Midnight on Skype. That's our Skype handle. And the lines are open. And I'm really sorry. I believe, and I'm thinking back, I think this is the first guest that I have decided would not be, you know, illuminating for the rest of the evening, because he basically is not what I had expected or what you deserve.
Basically, move on.
Turn down your radio, please.
Wolf, hello.
You're on the air.
Hi Richard. Happy 4/7.
You know, I looked at the website, and the one thing that struck me is the guy's paper, who this group is claiming is the beginning of their attention to 47, they can't find his paper. And I thought that was very odd and suspicious.
Yeah, it is, actually. I can't.
And it made me suspicious of it. Oh. You know, it's almost to me like it was a big Shaggy Dog April 1 joke. You know, the central piece of research starts you on looking at patterns, and for some reason you can't find the paper, which obviously is not classified, it's not hidden, and no one can find it. That struck me as very weird. Hello? Wolf?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello. Okay, anyways,
Oh, yeah, you have your radio on. You have your radio on. That's why there's a time delay, and you can't do that, okay? So we will not do that anymore, okay? This is turning into last night, you know, Mark II, which I really didn't want to get back into. But next week, while we're waiting for someone else to circle and land at Idlewild, let me kind of give you a preview of next week. Next week is going to be revolutionary because on the night of the 14th, as I said last night, I'm having Paul LaViolette on, and I'm actually companioning him with David Disler, who is our EM guy, our do-it-yourself EM guy, the EM drive he's been working on in his spare time. And I'm going to have both of them on in the second hour. I'm going to have Paul for the first, and then I'm going to have David join us, because David took one look at the videos of this incredible new breakthrough space drive system, and he said, oh, I can do that. So he's going to hopefully be able to do that in the next week, and if not, he'll do it a few days later, and then we'll have independent replication of the remarkable technology that Dr. LaViolette is going to describe to us on Thursday morning. Now, on Tuesday, we have Bruce Lipton, and that's all I'll say because I don't want to give any secrets away, but it should be a pretty interesting show. All right, we've got my info. Good morning. You're on the air. Give us your real name and where you're calling from.
It's Chris and New York. How are you tonight?
New York.
Yeah, not familiar.
I used to love going to Central Park in New York when I worked at the Hayden Planetarium. It was kind of like country in the middle of New York, Manhattan, that incredible place, Central Park. So, yeah, you're in the right place at the right time in the right spring. So what can we do for you tonight?
Yeah, and I loved having you on my show, too. It was really great. Anyway, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Back on the BAI days when you came on.
Oh, my God. That's out of my ancient history.
Yeah. You know, we had fun back in those days, you know.
We sure did.
Now the reason why I called was because you're moving into a new phase, and I just wanted to tell you that it's quite interesting. How you feeling about all this? So this is like in stone now. You're going to be jumping and moving?
Not hopefully. We're looking at a new network. We have some things that we've learned, you know, with dark matter over the last 9 months that are going to stand us in good stead, but it's time to move on and move up, as that TV show used to say.
Are you feeling like this is like the world coming, I don't know, full circle for you now? Like this is going to be what you anticipated would have been the move with this network, but now because of all the changes going on, that this next place you're going to be landing at is like the next.
Well, my guess, we were talking about evolution, you know, a little while ago, and everything has to evolve. You either evolve, you grow, or you die, and it's time for us to evolve and to grow, and we have other possibilities, and that's why we're going to grow in other possibilities.
It's quite exciting.
Okay, anything else?
Because I got that sense. I think everyone out in the ether of listening was getting that same kind of vibe. Because he wasn't really giving you anything substantial to back up his theories.
Come on.
You know, and I think your patience was quite, you know, commendable at a certain point. I think you held on a lot longer than you really wanted to.
I do the same thing with calls. Remember, I don't give people the bum's rush, because sometimes when people come on, like, it's obvious that Isaac is not really proficient at doing interviews and focusing, you know, I got a set of what we call talking points, and there was no real kind of arc for a story. When you come on the air and you have a book, or you have a point of view, or you have a set of research, you should at least have done the professional thing to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, to have a story arc, to have a something which will bring people into your perspective. And on this show, we actually insist that you document, and the thing that Isaac wasn't doing is documenting.
That's pretty much what I was. That's what I was hearing. You know, I felt that some of his theories were a little on the fringe of, it made no sense. I don't know how many books he could have written, but I'm not trying to trash him. But it just seemed like I wasn't buying what he was selling.
Well, but he was selling us his opinion, and again, opinions are nice, opinions are great, but opinion is opinion. So, and I've got
the last question. I'm going to jump. Last question. What are you most excited about that's coming down the line, other than, I know you always feel it, full disclosure, but what else? What else in your life right now is something that you haven't shared that's exciting?
Well, actually, I have shared it. When you listen to Thursday morning next week, you are going to hear and see, because we have radio with pictures, so I can show images and video and tests. There is this stunning breakthrough in space technology, which is going to revolutionize life on this planet. And I can say that categorically based on the idea that the technology is real. So what we're going to spend 2 hours on Thursday morning doing is going through, is the technology real? Can people in this audience replicate it? And they can. It's that simple. It's incredibly elegant and simple. And if it can be borne out that the next phase, the next model that we're going to talk about, you know, building something can actually carry, you know, human beings, spacecraft, etc. If that model development works the way we think it's going to, that's going to be the game changer that I've been talking about. And that's going to be the technology that will allow me and this audience to send a private spacecraft to the moon and photograph Alice, the stuff that's really there. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Cool. Okay. Just wanted to wanted you to share that with everyone.
Okay. Thank you much. And tell all my friends at BAI I'm still thinking fondly of them. Actually, it would be nice to be on BAI with this show. Do you know anybody over there?
You know, you never know. I mean, you know, I've been planted there for 26 years, so it's not inconceivable that, you know, who knows? There's always they're reaching out. I mean, you never know. I would think that you could be on New York radio and make a mark at this point.
Well, thank you.
So, I mean, anything's, you know, just if you put it out there, who knows? So,
who knows? Okay, we're coming to the bottom of the hour, so I got to go.
All right.
Thanks much. Bye.
You got it. Yep.
All right, everybody hold still. Michelle is calling in from Tokyo and a bunch of other people, and there's someone waiting. So if you'll be all patient, we will come back. It's at the bottom of the hour, and it's time for another interesting interlude, followed by, you know, those commercial things. We have to kind of do that around here, but you're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. And on the other side of midnight, almost anything can happen, and tonight, an unusual thing did. Thank goodness it's not a pattern. We shall return.
It seemed just like a perfect evening. Get in the car and drive away. Leave behind a day of grieving. My former life had passed away. I'm on my way. I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
And we are back on the other side of midnight, and I'm going to give you a quote from my grandmother again. God works in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. And his wonders were that he decided that tonight we needed open minds, we needed connection with the audience of Other Side of Midnight. And that's why I'm kind of glad that we had this, because it was a kind of a teachable moment, at least for me. And so our next caller is standing by. You're on the air.
Hi, Richard. This is Greg from Kennewick, Washington.
Hi, Greg.
I tried to get back to you a while ago about getting in contact with LIGO Observatory up here.
Oh, yes.
And I think if you go on their website and try to contact somebody, they seem to be overwhelmed with trying to get the information out. And I think your name would be a better door opener than...
Okay, well, M is actually pursuing some very interesting people on LIGO and detection of gravitational waves and all that. And I saw a paper the other day that said just because they've detected gravitational waves does not mean that it's from black holes, which I thought was very interesting. Remember I said when the news first came out, look at the details, the devil is... Oh, I did it tonight. The devil is in the details. Well, the actual waveforms of the gravitational signature that they think they've seen, according to this paper, is not indicative of two black holes coalescing, merging, etc. So I don't think that story has even been written yet, and we're trying to get the right person to come on and talk about the details.
Well, I find this story very interesting because it's connected to your research at the top of the pyramid.
Exactly.
And I go to a place here where I think I found an archaeological astronomy place where people were watching the stars
oh.
a long time ago. And in Indian lore up here, there is a female deity that the Indians would go and women would pray to and ask them to come into their dreams
hmm.
and fix their problems.
Okay, do me a favor. You have a smartphone?
Yes, I do.
Okay, take some pictures and send them to me, and we'll put them up on Radio with Pictures with a backstory.
Well, I had a question for you tonight.
Okay.
And in Carl Monk's work and its connection with the geometry of the places on Earth.
Right, various sacred sites, and they're all
the sacred sites.
And they all
the
seem
energy
to be
coming out of there.
Say again?
With the energy coming out of them.
Yeah.
In his work, he has a number, 46.47, which is the square root of 2160.
Oh, yeah.
Being the number of years that the precession of the equinox
and,
go across
and,
to 30
and,
degree.
Hang on, and the diameter of the moon in miles.
Yeah, well, that's why I thought I would ask you at this opportune moment tonight, what's your impression of a place on Earth that is 46.47, the amount, the span of the sun on its movement north and south, of 46 or 47 degrees, the place where I go, the sun on the summer solstice, sits at 46 degrees north. And I take pictures of the face of a cliff
okay.
that sticks out of 46 degrees north.
Send me the pictures, okay?
Yeah, go on.
I have to move on, but send me the pictures,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Yep. Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, Richard.
Hi so, there.
I'll just throw out something real fast for you before I get started in on everything.
oh, you have a list.
Well, actually, yeah, sort of.
I figured.
well, first of all, not to throw more, not criticism, but more blankets on your mood tonight, but I was told that I should tell you a startling fact that I hate to break your illusion, but actually, I do not live 30 miles north of Tokyo.
I thought in the first time you came on the show, you said you were 40 miles north of Tokyo.
It's 60 miles west of Tokyo.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
So
it's still in the same country, and
it's
if it's west, it's the same latitude, so it's at the Tokyo latitude. So, okay, now that we're finished with the nitpicks, what's on your list?
You can blame that one on M. She told me I had to tell you.
Oh, okay.
I haven't been able to listen to all of tonight's conversation because I was at work.
You didn't. You didn't miss much. Sorry.
Well, I came in right before he started talking about the Matrix, which was an opportune place for me to come in because, of course, I have a lot to say on that one.
Mm.
And you might hear some rattling in the background. That's actually the wind. There's a big thunderstorm.
Oh.
And I just rode home on my bike in that thunderstorm while listening to you, desperately trying to get home so that I could call
Aww.
And get dry. Gosh, yeah, he sounded interesting in a way.
Well, he was supposed to be, and if he digs deeper and understands that when you're writing about something that's controversial, you have to document.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at one of his books here, and I don't see any footnotes, any documentation, anything.
And see, that's what I've always liked about people like you and other of the people like Jim Mars and Joseph P. Farrell is that there's so much documentation in all of their work that I really just I really appreciate that. So I really appreciate you letting him go. Not that I wanted to silence or censor anybody. I think you gave him his
Well, look, he had some strange ideas about transgender and transhumanism and all that. And I am not a fan of transhumanism in terms of technological augmentation.
No, and I'm not either.
Because I see that as a clear route to the whole 666 business and control. I mean, why would you turn your brain over to an AI?
But well, I mean,
I strongly believe in transhumanism in terms of enhancing our own potentials, because we're barely tapping the surface and the physics is now with us. And yes, consciousness is a reality and consciousness is increasing. And the very fact we can have these interesting conversations and ask these questions, and we're seeing these films that are laying out realities and possibilities that no one imagined when I was growing up, except in the comic books. To me, that's a positive trend, because it's back to the big C, choice.
Right. And, you know, that was the thing, because he clearly wanted to make some sort of link between transhumanism and transgender, which, other than the fact that they both have the word transition.
And I was going to say, maybe trans fat would be thrown in there, too.
Exactly, right? I mean, so the transaxle, I guess, if you want to go with that. But
isn't there a psychology term, transactual analysis or something?
Maybe, I'm not really sure. But as far as The Matrix goes, for me, The Matrix was a huge deal. I mean, when I first saw that movie, it was before I had come out. It was even before I had really figured out who I was. But it impacted me in a huge way, and I couldn't quite put my finger on why for so long. But it did make me ask this question: what is it about my reality that I'm not paying attention to?
Mm.
And I think for him to imply that that's
bad
somehow, or somehow supporting transhumanism completely misses the point, just because the Wachowskis are both transgender.
Who cares? Sorry, you know. To me, it's so irrelevant. The only reason I'm going to talk to you and Leslie about that subject per se is because so many other people need role models. They need to see success. They need to see people who come into their own. So it's a human story. And the fact is, you could have climbed Mount Everest and I would have you on to talk about something which is incredibly personally satisfying and fulfilling and could be a role model for other people. So I'm not hipped and you know, look, if I see one more story about Carly, I think I'm going to – anyway. But that's what Hollywood does. They overdo.
Well, sure.
We totally, totally overdo. But to basically attack the producers because of their personality and their personal, you know, lifestyle or their personal existence is totally irrelevant to the film, which had stunning important things to say, except I got to tell you, I was really disappointed at the ending. You know
of
why?
The whole series?
No. That first film.
Or just
film.
The last movie. Oh, yeah. The first film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When it came out as to why human beings were in the Matrix, I mean, it makes zero sense to me. I would have liked something so much more at the level of consciousness, but the idea that we're all just light bulbs, that we were powering like some huge battery bank, you know, to me, unless they were making the point that ultimately ultimate control of your reality is based on insipid and stupid ideas that really don't make any sense anyway, if that's what they were trying to say, then I can kind of buy that. But as a physicist, I looked at that and I said, come on, there's so much more interesting things you could have done with the reason we're in the Matrix.
Well perhaps, but I think and this is actually where I think their being transgender is to a certain extent related.
Oh.
Which is that and this was something that they brought up after I've forgotten her name, the first of the two to come out. Lana? Is it Lana? Something like that. I can't remember her name all of a sudden. When she first came out, there was a sort of a reevaluation and some comments that she made talking about the movie that talked about how there is somewhat of a metaphor for transgender in that movie, and more than just transgender, but also that, in that there are two realities. There are the realities that are inside us, ourselves, our consciousness, our being, who we are as individuals, and then there's the sort of hierarchical, you know, structure, that sort of conspiratorial structure, that social structure that puts a world on us. And I mean that in a way that they literally are imprinting the world on us and saying, this is how the world is, this is how you act, and we're going to use you while you're living that sort of rat race life, and that you can't be outside of that.
So the energy metaphor you feel is the core of the film itself, because that's what's going on.
I think so. I think what they were trying to get at was this idea that our social reality is just as much a construct as the sort of the metaphorical computer reality in this. And you could talk about Gnosticism and ancient traditions like that as well. But I think the core idea is, you know, there's a part near the beginning where the Agent Smith first talks to Neo, and he says, "It seems you've been living two lives."
Mm.
And that was a really big thing, because for many transgender people, and for people of all, you know, everything else as well, we do have two lives. We have our real life, the part of us that we identify with and keep, and it's important to us, but we also know that it might not be considered socially acceptable. So we hide that part of ourselves.
Well, we used to, because it's now changing, thank God, at Warp 9.
And I think that's what the Matrix, I think that's the good point of the Matrix, is that it told everyone, stop playing the game and start living reality.
Hmm. Well, it like all these films, and that was, you're right, it really was a landmark. It gets people to think. It gets people to think outside the box, which is the cliche. And I was really kind of surprised that Isaac was looking at all of this incredible symbolism, as Georgia said, as negative, negative, negative. And I hate to say it, but it's because he's looking at it through the lens of his personal religious beliefs, and not stepping out and being more objective and actually looking for the truth.
Yeah, and I feel like I kind of wonder what his concept or what his viewpoint of the movie – sorry about that. It's the wind there. What his view of the movie was before he found out that they were transgender. I wonder if that affected it in any way.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get to ask the question.
Of course. but that's okay.
Okay. By the way, M says that Lana came out first.
Lana. Yeah, okay. I thought so.
Every time I hear Lana, I think of Lana Lang. Sorry, Superman, etc.
Oh, right. There's, you know, talking
and
about
on we go. Yes. Hey, look, we've got tons of folks. I'm so glad you got able to call in from 60 miles west of Tokyo.
Well, I wanted to say to you, to
60,
your
by
caller,
the way, being a very tetrahedral number. You know, 60 is very tetrahedral.
Ah, I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, 60 degrees.
But thank you.
It's all part of the 360 circles and all that.
I see. Well, I wanted to say thank you to the earlier caller who asked for me. I didn't know that your listeners care that much.
You have a fan club.
I really appreciate it.
You have people waiting for Michelle to call in from 40 miles north of Tokyo. So, of course, we now have to change your GPS coordinates so we can beam you up anytime we need to.
Well, I would love that. Send me to space.
Okay.
Love to go exploring.
Hey, you got
to nice evening.
You got to tune in next Thursday morning. It's going to be so mind-blowing. Wait till you see this. Wait till you see.
I will certainly do my best.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good evening. It's
evening. Good evening.
Yes. Torch, you're on the air, finally.
Hey, how's it going?
You have to ask?
Yeah,
have
I know.
Have you been listening?
Yeah. Anything I can help you out with, any answers there?
Well, look, I know you're a Christian, but I have a feeling you're a little more discerning than other Christians that I've talked to in the last hour.
Correct.
So what did you want to add tonight?
Well, first off, you were talking about the moon landing. I came across a video today where Nixon's administration all agreed that the moon landing was fake, the first one.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. A, you've got to send it to me. And B, how do you know it's not just, you know, April Fool's or The Onion or whatever?
I sent it to our... And
Skype dropped out on us. Tell me again, please.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I'll give it to you. It's in your mailbox.
I'll go look for it. So the thesis is this is a leaked document from the Nixon administration?
Well, it's interviews with everybody that was in his administration at the time.
Yeah, interviews conducted by whom? And
I don't know.
You don't mean it's this weird film that claims that Stanley Kubrick actually faked the moon landing? Do you?
Oh no, I saw that. That was all fake.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw that. That's the one right
okay.
there.
Okay. All right. You sent it to me in Skype. It's a YouTube thing. I will watch it and we'll obviously comment.
Yeah, next week or something. But, yeah, anything else you wanted to know? I mean, did you watch Childhood's End, by the way?
I've actually watched the two I didn't get to watch all of episode number 3 because there's been a few things going on. And, you know, quality time to watch television is kind of at a premium, particularly during this political season, because I've got to keep up on what's going on with the campaign, which I think is going to take some very dramatic turns in the not-too-distant future. In fact, I'm going to have Joe Bookman on Friday morning, and we're going to talk about that a little, and then we're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff, including he actually got to watch with Travis Walton the Tracy Torme film on Fire in the Sky. So we're going to talk about that in a bigger context. So look for that on this Friday morning.
Okay. But you got to see the Deadpool, right?
No, not yet.
You didn't?
No,
not yet. Because I heard Robin talking about that.
Yeah, but she gets to see some things I don't get to see, so.
Oh, I figure you go together.
Well, we do. You know,
okay.
She may have watched it online, so.
Oh, okay.
You know, that we have that advantage now. You can actually watch movies totally, totally separate if you want to, which we don't often do, but sometimes, you know.
And you know my opinion on everything else is definitely an underlining Luciferian controlled shadow government. It's all coming to a head too.
Well, look at what happened out of Panama. Remember what I said about competition? Is that not competition? Is that not competition quintessentially exemplified?
Yeah, they really exposed everybody, didn't they?
Well, we haven't got the American list yet, but we're going to have a guest on next week. I'm not going to give away surprises, but tune in Wednesday morning.
Oh, I'm here every night.
And you will hear something interesting on the Panama Papers.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, it's been good talking with you tonight.
Likewise.
And, hang in there, brother.
Thank you.
Nice talking with you, Em. Take care.
Okay. You're on the air, caller. From, Richard, Boston. You're in Boston.
Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, Boston. Used to go down to Beantown all the time. What can I do for you?
Hey, Richard. I just wanted to say thank you for all the work you're doing. I don't know what happened tonight, but I got the gist of it, and I think you probably made the right decision in your wisdom. And what else should we talk about? There's many things to talk about.
Oh, my God. There's a world of things to talk about.
I would like to ask, what was your first favorite superhero and why?
My first
comic character.
My first favorite what?
Super comic book
character. Oh, superhero.
Yeah.
In the comics world, well, obviously it was Superman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Allegory of the Sun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting. And I think it's interesting that you have a lot of these comic book characters coming to life now.
Well, we also have some
actual reality.
Well, exactly. And then we get into the, you know, is the Marvel Universe actually trying to tell us that that's the real universe? That this is the Matrix and that's really what we either used to be or what we can be again, et cetera. In other words, I had so many questions I wanted to ask Isaac if he was equipped to grapple with the big picture, but it was too obvious that he wasn't.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. But there are people that can.
There are, and we know some, and we will have them on.
Yes, and...
I'm willing to give anybody a shot on the show as something interesting and has done some research, and I got 3 books stacked up beside me here that Isaac had written, and the only problem I had, and that's why I got into it a little bit, when you're not sure of your thesis to the point where you're concealing your real identity, that tells you... So I have never used a fake name, not on emails, not on blogs. I'm who I am. Take it or leave it. This is me. And if you won't stand behind your work as you, that in itself tells me you're coming from a fearful place as opposed to a centered place where your knowledge, your data, your research, your documentation will stand the test of time.
I agree. You know, Einstein didn't have many footnotes either.
In that first paper, he had none. He had none. But we all know where he got the data from.
Right. when he's a patent clerk. Okay.
Yep.
Right?
Anyway, we got to move on. There's tons of other folks.
I know. I'm sorry, Richard, but much love to you. And
well, thank you.
If you're looking for a new home, you know, Revolution Radio.
I know. I know. They've been kind of dangling the bait.
Come on, I'm there too.
Okay.
Over.
Later.
Thanks, Richard.
Okay. Let's go here. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, Richard. This is your old pal Dana calling from California.
Ah, Dana.
Well, I think you made the right call tonight. I really do.
Well, I did it grudgingly because I like giving people as much room and sometimes rope as required. And my philosophy is that if someone cannot support their case with one piece of evidence, one piece of actual, you know, data, then it's just opinion, and that's what, you know, open hailing frequencies are for. Because I don't demand that you guys, you know, support your stuff because there's no time.
No, I hope that he's still listening, and I would encourage him, whatever his real name is, for him to continue his research.
Absolutely.
Start some documentation. This stuff is not hard to, a lot of people have a tendency just to take other people's research and sort of just parrot it. And also, when you said that, you know, Bill Cooper was a, or when he said Bill Cooper was a landmark for him, I just kind of went, eek, ouch.
We can all enter these realms through different doorways. I came in through the Martian doorway. Bill Cooper is a valid doorway, but you need to grow beyond Bill.
Yeah, just don't stay at that location. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you got to grow and evolve from that point.
We're not supposed to evolve. See, that's the problem.
Well, are you kidding me? My opinions on this whole field have changed dramatically. When I got into this stuff back in the 70s when I was a kid, I was convinced we were talking about a metal object in a field you could walk up to and knock on the door and somebody would answer it. But I'm not convinced that's what's happening at all.
Well, it's one of the things that's happening.
Yeah, and another thing in this field is I realize is that it's not dialectic. We're not dealing with digital phenomenon here. We're dealing with shades. We're dealing with it's not ors. It's ands. It's this and it's this mm-hmm, and it's this mm-hmm. and it's this.
Well,
it's
remember this. The classic quote from Jesus: "In my Father's house are many mansions." Again, it's a metaphor. And
that's so funny. You haven't seen the third night of the Childhood's End, because I haven't either. I've seen the first two nights, but I haven't seen the third one. But
well,
I know how it ends. So,
well, I know Arthur is somewhere saying, for God's sake, Hoagland, get with it and finish the damn series so you can talk about it. You know, he waited all those decades to make a movie on his work of art, and I haven't had time to finish the last chapter.
But, Rich, I would say hang in there. There's nothing to hang in for, but I think, you know what?
Oh, yes, there is. Oh, my God.
Of course, but what I'm saying is, listen, what I mean is, you got to go with your gut always, and I think you're making some very, very good calls right now. The guy tonight, you went with your gut. You gave him an hour, and you went freewheeling into open lines. And the thing you're doing now with going to another network, I trust you. I trust your gut on that.
Well, and the key part about going anywhere is can Hoagland be Hoagland? If Trump can be Trump, can Hoagland be Hoagland? And that's the parameter. I have to be able to do this show the way I want to do it and do all the experimental stuff, and some things work and some things don't. And we're growing and evolving. I mean, I look back at 9 months ago and it feels like I've been doing this for years. It's really weird.
Well, Rich, you have. You honestly have. You've been a part of everybody's life for a very long time. I can remember the first consciousness experiment where Art Bell had us, essentially praying for your heart to get better.
Yes.
And I was a part of that.
Speaking of distance
privileged.
Healing and Dean Radin and all that, I'm a recipient. When we
And then you were a part of it when I was a part of that, and I was privileged to be that. And also was a part of it when we did that thing for Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
And I, you know, it's funny. I think you should go with your gut, and I think you're making the right calls here.
Well, thank you. And on that note, we're out of time.
Okay, Rich.
Thanks for calling.
Good night.
Good night. Well, folks, I'm sorry. Sorry, Aaron. I wanted to get you on the air, but time slips away.
Oh, that's okay. It happens all the time.
Well,
I can't stand it.
Anyway, You've been on the other side of midnight. You'll be back here again tomorrow morning, same time, same bat channel. And until then, and our surprises then, keep remembering. Third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.